The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
What's the difference between covenant theology and Reformed theology? Well, let's find out on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you so much for joining us. So, we are taking questions from listeners just like you. In fact, I hope you might consider sending us your questions. You can do that by zapping us an email. radio@faithalone.org. Well, let's go right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
Here again in the studio with Bob, and welcome.
Thank you, Sean. It's good, and I understand you have a third Doug question.
Yes,
a different Doug, but number three.
The
Doug.
Last two episodes we've had Doug. Actually, the last one we had Josiah, but this one is another Doug. I don't know why. I guess all the Dougs are writing us. Okay, so this is about covenant versus reform theology. And he says, great radio program today. I appreciate Sean's explanation on the distinction between Calvinism and reformed theology. So just to recap, Calvinism is specifically about salvation, soteriology, the 5 points of Calvinism. And reform theology is about...
It's a bigger package.
About everything else. It's not just salvation.
It will include that, but it also includes a view of, for example, the last days.
Yeah, the last days, how the
church structure, baptism.
How salvation is unfolded throughout the Bible and all that kind of stuff. He says, my own understanding of this issue is a little different. I would say that John MacArthur is indeed reformed and a Calvinist who happens to embrace aspects of dispensational theology. He refers to himself as a leaky dispensationalist. Of course, MacArthur is not a covenant theologian like the late R.C. Sproul was, but based on my understanding, Reformed Baptists like John Piper, who reject dispensationalism, would also be categorized as covenant theologians. However, Presbyterian theologians see Reformed Baptists as rather inconsistent on the issue of baptism, since the latter group rejects paedobaptism.
Paedobaptism is baptizing children,
yeah.
Babies.
So, yeah, John Piper is Reformed because he embraces a lot of those wider aspects of theology. Now, he doesn't practice infant baptism, so he is considered inconsistent on that point.
Right.
I don't know if he believes in a Presbyterian church government. So he would still be on the Reformed end. He's definitely not dispensational.
But basically, it seems to me what Doug here is saying is that Reformed theology is kind of a continuum.
Yeah.
And they don't all necessarily believe exactly the same thing.
Like, where is John MacArthur on that spectrum as a leaky dispensationalist? Is he has some dispensational aspects to his thought.
Right.
But then I guess he also has some of this other stuff.
So we might call him leaky reformed?
Yeah. Is he
also?
Is John MacArthur, is he progressive dispensational
at
all?
No, not to my knowledge.
Would be the difference if you're a covenant guy with some dispensational aspects? I don't know. Isn't that progressive?
Well,
I don't know.
Okay, progressive dispensationalism came about after I graduated from Dallas Seminary, 82 for my master's, 85 for my doctorate. It came about after that, and Craig Blazing and Darrell Bach devised this system. And it's kind of, call it a mosaic. They don't think there's any particular passage that teaches progressive dispensationalism, but they think they can find it through a whole bunch of verses. And I don't fully understand it, but basically, the idea of progressive dispensationalism, initially, I used to go to the meetings at the Evangelical Theological Society where the progressive dispensationalists were meeting with the Reformed theologians.
Okay.
And they were trying to find some, I guess you'd call it in French, rapprochement, or,
yeah,
you know, some reconciliation. Essentially, I think they established progressive dispensationalism to make a bridge with Reformed theology. And by the way, is it fair to equate Reformed theology with covenant theology?
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Those are identical?
Yeah, covenant theology, I think, is how you understand the progress of revelation. It's you read the Bible in terms of the covenants, whereas we would kind of read it in terms of different dispensations.
Right.
So I guess the emphasis is a little bit different. But basically, I think covenant theology, an essential aspect to it is replacement the idea that the church replaces Israel.
Okay, now explain that real quick. And this is a horrible doctrine, by the way.
Well, and actually, I'm writing about this right now. We're working on a book called Doctrine for Disciples, An Introduction to Systematic Theology. And I'm doing the first draft of the chapter on Israel.
That's called Israelology?
Israelology. And what I say is, even though most of the Bible is about Israel, most systematic theologies hardly discuss Israel at all. And the reason why is because they think that the church replaces Israel. So God no longer has Israel or the Jewish people as his special chosen people. They have been replaced by the church.
So the promises made to Israel are fulfilled in the church.
They're fulfilled or they're inherited by the church in very spiritualized ways.
So Israel's not going to get the land.
No.
Israel is no longer the chosen people.
No, Abraham's literal descendants or David's literal descendants or whoever, they don't get anything. It's really just the spiritual descendants, you know, the people who believe like Abraham. And that's not our view. Our view is that, no, God made lots of promises to Israel. Most of the Bible is about all these promises to Israel. And guess what? He is going to keep them. For example, half of the prophecies of the Messiah were fulfilled literally when Jesus came the first time, and the other half are going to be fulfilled literally when he comes the second time. And those literal promises all have to do with Israel and the land and the kingdom. And
but you can see how people who believe in replacement theology might not have a high regard for the Jewish people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, historically, there's just no question that replacement theology and anti-Semitism, there's a direct line between the two. It's not necessary, you know, you don't have to, but that, just in history, that was always kind of the connection.
But within dispensational thought, there's a high regard for Israel. Dispensationalists are thrilled that Donald Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem.
Right.
Thrilled when he's doing peace accords with various Arab nations.
Yeah.
And we pray for the peace of Israel and Jerusalem. At our church, we almost every week are praying for Israel.
Right. Now, having said that, I think a criticism that can be made of that is that we put the modern state of Israel on too high a pedestal and we just let them get away. You know, we're not critical enough of them. Because the modern state of Israel, I believe personally, fulfills some prophecies, but the Israel of the future is going to be very different from what we see.
Oh, absolutely. This is not a believing Israel.
Yeah.
This is not an Israel in fellowship with Messiah.
Mm.
But it's still God's chosen people.
Right.
If the Lord returns in our generation, this generation of Jews, some of them are going to come to faith and they're going to go into the millennium.
Yes. Now, covenant theologians would absolutely reject pretty much everything we just said. You know, they would say, no, there is no, the modern state of Israel does not fulfill any prophecy whatsoever. God has no future plans for the Jews as Jews. It's only the church. Now, where would John MacArthur and where do John Piper fit on that particular issue? I really don't know. Probably there's a spectrum of views again.
I think they both have a belief that Israel is God's chosen people and that there's a future for Israel, but I don't know that for sure. It depends how leaky MacArthur's dispensationalism is.
Right, but definitely someone like Doug mentions R.C. Sproul, a covenant guy. He definitely would say, you know, there is no fulfilled prophecy for Israel, I don't think. But what about progressive? What do progressives say?
Okay, now progressives, the ones that I've met, they typically say this. At least I've given this story before, but a friend on the board of Jews for Jesus, and he told me that, and his friend who was working with, Tuvia, that was working with Jews for Jesus, they both told me that they believe the promises made to Israel would be fulfilled in the millennium.
Okay.
And then after the millennium, Israel would cease to exist and there would be one people of God, or at least Israel as a special chosen people would cease to exist.
Okay.
And there would be one people of God forever.
Okay.
And we would all be one, and there wouldn't be the nations, Israel, and the church, which is the common dispensational view, is there'll be three different people groups on the new earth.
Right. And why do we say that Israel has to continue beyond the millennium as a distinct entity?
Well, it relates to how we understand the Hebrew word olam. Olam can mean a long time in certain texts, but often it means forever. And we believe that when olam is used concerning the nation of Israel, It's making eternal promises. And so God has promised that Israel gets the land forever. I mean, why is it that we call in Revelation 21, the only city that's mentioned in Revelation 21 and 22 is called the New Jerusalem?
Right.
Why isn't it called the New Detroit?
Well, yeah.
Or the New Paris or the New London?
Yeah. So if Jerusalem is in the eternal state as per the final chapters of Revelation, that would strongly suggest that Israel continues, right?
Yeah, and look at Revelation 21:14. You want to read that?
Sure. Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb.
So now you have the 12 apostles.
Well, actually, go up to verse 12.
Yeah,
right?
But look at verse 12.
Also, she had a great and high wall with 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates, and names were written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. So here are the names of the 12 tribes of Israel on this eternal city. Now, I don't know. I guess someone could say, well, this was a memorial of what used to be, but now the 12 tribes no longer exist.
And the same thing with the apostles then?
Yeah. Well,
this is a memorial of what used to be?
It's like a memorial. This is what...
The church used to be, but
yeah,
it doesn't exist anymore?
But now we're all one people. Maybe. I mean, it could be, but it sure sounds like...
Right.
I would think it's a present reality.
I would, too. The promises made to Israel are eternal promises, and you can't make sense of the Old and New Testament with Israel just getting the promised land for 1,000 years. And I think that's the progressive dispensational view, is Israel gets the kingdom for 1,000 years, then no more Israel.
Okay. I mean, this is what I like about theology. You know, the conversation goes somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, everything is connected. Everything is interconnected. And these are big issues that you need to find out, where does my church stand on these issues? You may never have thought about it, but let me tell you, it makes a huge difference to how you not only read the Bible, but how you understand God's purposes for the present and for the future. If you're a covenant theologian, or if you're in a covenant church or a progressive dispensational church, you're going to have a much different expectation for the future and for how to read the Bible now than if you are in a dispensational church.
Right.
So I don't know. If the only thing we've done in this show is just to raise these questions in your mind so that you start seeking out the answers, I think that's probably a good thing.
Amen.
Thank you guys for that great discussion. Do you like what you're learning on the show? Well, there's more where that came from. We would love for you to come visit us at our website. It's faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. We've got all kinds of free resources on our site. One of which is really popular, is our free magazine. It comes out 6 times a year, it's full color, and it's completely free. Subscribe on the website, and it will show up in your mailbox hassle-free. It's faithalone.org. Another reason to visit the site is to learn a little bit more about becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus. All gifts are tax deductible and very much appreciated, because it's how we stay on the air. You ever have one of those questions that keeps you up at night? I know that I do sometimes. Well, if you've got a question, comment, or feedback, we want to hear from you. Send us a message at radio@faithalone.org. radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about regrets at the judgment seat of Christ, so tune in for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society, and until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.